You know, it's the start of something, hopefully.
Welcome to the Garibaldi Gazette, a podcast about Nottingham Forest. On this week's episode, reflecting on a cup upset, looking ahead to Liverpool, and old tat like tinfoil FA Cups. Concentrating on the league, this is the Garibaldi Gazette. Welcome, listener. We're with you a day later than normal this week because of Forest's involvement in the Football Association's Challenge Cup. But we've got a busy show for you today. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I'm joined, of course, by Asha Ali. How are you doing, Asha?
Hello, everyone. I've actually got an announcement to make. It's an announcement that's, you know, it's long been brewing, actually. And I've thought, well, now's the right time to say it. I love Nottingham Forest. That's it. That's the announcement.
Wow, that's...
Also hearing that Nottingham Forest might be magic. So, you know, it's a big day news-wise here. Nick Miller's also back with us. Are you okay, Nick?
I am, yeah. I haven't got anything as quite as dramatic to announce as that. Although, we'll go on to discuss the game later. But my irritation and frustration at the end of the game was alleviated by my cat walking into the room with half a mouse in his mouth, which actually turned out to be a full live mouse, and he dropped it. So then the time was spent chasing the mouse around the house. So I suppose I have him to thank for not kind of falling into too much of a pit of despair after the game.
Lovely image that you just chasing the mouse around the house. So we've also got a debutante with us. It's a big welcome to James Hooton, better known perhaps as Sam Dingle on Emmerdale, which is a long-running, very popular soap opera here in the good old U of K. More significantly for us though, James, you're a Forest fan. We are delighted to have you. Thank you very much for your company today.
Thank you for welcoming me in, boys. And it's almost like symbolism, isn't it? That mouse that was in the cat's mouth. Because it's almost as if Man United were toying with us last night. And this spatters out right at the end of the game with a Casemiro header.
Well, look, we're going to get into that and why it doesn't really matter too much anyway. But first of all, James, tell us why you're a Forest fan. When did it start? What was your first game? Who's your favourite player? All that good stuff.
Now, I can't remember where it started. Obviously, full disclosure, I'm a completely fair-weather Forest supporter, as I've outlined to Arsha's wife before I came on the show, that I know next to nothing about the current team, tactics, management, etc. But as a young boy, it's probably late 70s when we were in our pomp that I recall I went to a match. I have no clue who we were playing, but I was in the Bridgeford end. I remember the old stands, those old red stands, and watching a match, having no clue what was going on. But my mum had took me down. She wasn't particularly a Forest fan, but it was when, you know, when we were good, when we were European Cup standard. So my first memory of the City Ground would have been Bridgeford End. All of my mates, as I was saying before we came on air, they were all Trent End stalwarts when we were sort of teenagers and early 20s. And they sort of fell by the wayside. So most of my mates don't go down the match anymore. I was always more of a player of football than a watcher of football. And still to this day at 50 years old, I still try and hobble around the football pitch rather than watch match of the day. But I would describe myself as a fair weather supporter. And, you know, it used to be a time when I'd watch a live match once, maybe twice a season, but I've not seen them for several seasons now. So this is where we are. I'm just harking back to the glory days. As I showed you boys before, this is the only Forest shirt I own. And I still wear it on Wednesday night, six aside. I put my Forest top on. I organise the team, so I'm always darks. Forest top is always on. So
it's the 95-96, I reckon, right? The one with it's got black trim, you can't see this, isn't it? And the Labatt sponsor.
Well, this was 94 to 96. I think they had this for two seasons, I think. I believe is that.
Yeah, back in the proper days where, you know, a kit would last for a couple of seasons, so they wouldn't rinse you every season.
And all of this was nothing but Fields, the golden times of golden era. Football. Yeah. So, James, when you do occasionally watch football these days, are you still as deluded as the rest of us and think, I could do a job here, you know? Maybe not for 90 minutes, but I could definitely impact this game as a late sub.
Well, football was my first love. So, yeah, even at 50, I still think, yeah, I could get on there. I could change the game. Obviously, you know, the level of athleticism on a football pitch, the mere mortals like ourselves, we wouldn't last even 30 seconds, would we? But, you know, if I was still in my prime, I would have loved to have played at a higher level, but never the dizzying heights of the standard that Forest have. Unfortunately, I never would have been good enough. I don't know about the rest of you. Arsha, you're a bit of a player, aren't you? Did you play at any level when you were a bit younger?
No, not after school. I played for school and college and stuff like that, but no one's got use for a number 10 who basically just comes on the field to look good and back heel and doesn't want to run. I don't want to run. You run. You're telling me to run for.
When we played that charity match that you came down, I thought, yeah, he looks the part here. Has he got any substance behind those good looks?
That day, they didn't want a number 10. They were like, mate, we don't need a number 10 today. Can you do something else? I was like, nah, I can't. Sorry. You're going to have to take me off. Took me off. Called my bluff.
You're a self-confessed luxury player. I reckon you absolutely love a no-look pass.
Absolutely. A no-look back heel, anything. I'm basically like, one of my heroes is Riquelme. Go figure.
I was going to say a poor man's João Carvalho.
That hurts. I'll take the shop. I'll take the shop in the city centre, but oh my God, that hurts.
Good player, but not a Forest player. It's high time we got on to the game against Manchester United. Let's do that next. Right, here is a voice note from our friend David Marples, recorded on his way out of the world famous City Ground.
Oh, football, you unfathomable, baffling, puzzle of an enigma. But then again, football providing extremes of sweet and sour, well, it's nothing new, is it? In fact, it's the age-old story of football. I'd like to say that's why we love it, but it's difficult when we do precisely what we've come to expect. We've seen this one before. Decent, do most things well, and then, you know, something about a defendable set piece, etc., etc., etc. Still, at least, you know, there were no on-pitch inquests, like at Villa. No sense that all our players were in the midst of a serious playground tantrum with each other, as if one of them had enjoyed an ultra-competitive game of Uno and it had got out of hand the night before, like at Villa. No on-game sort of shenanigans, really, like at Villa. It was better. Well, I guess all we're left with is empty feelings about what might have been. Definitely feels like a tough one to take. Felt we were very much in it. Felt we just needed one chance to fall. Certainly felt like a more coherent performance, but the chance didn't fall and these things happen. Sometimes all you can do is cling to the flotsam and jetsam that football and life throws at you by way of consolation. In this case, a spirited, encouraging performance, very coherent as well. And all we can look forward to is another, well, a winnable game this Saturday. That'd be nice. Given the replays and the treks to Blackpool and Bristol, it all feels a bit, well, football-y, I guess.
Many thanks to David, as ever, for that. James, I mean, it's a strange one, this, isn't it? Because obviously you want to beat Man United and get the prestige or whatever, and it's galling to lose a game in the last minute. But given that the draw was made before, and if Forest had won, they would have got Liverpool. Was it kind of like, well, actually, maybe we're better off out of this because we don't particularly need an extra game to be playing that we're probably going to lose anyway? I'm trying to find a silver lining, basically, in a difficult...
No attitude to have to this fine cup. And we were at home as well. What better opportunity to turn Man United over, who aren't the team that they once were. I was looking at it. What was the stats? It was like 67% possession to United. And that's in our backyard. Is that good enough to win a football match? Possibly not. And we had decent chances. But it was just that little bit of something else, like holding the ball up at the right times, putting those decent balls in. We lost the ball a couple of key times that didn't help. Just weren't good enough. But you would always want to win that match. And yeah, you face whoever, don't you? If you're going to win a cup, do you care whether it's Man United, you beat Man United and you face Liverpool? if you're going to win a cup, you want those games and you want to win those games, surely. And then the question comes to, are we good enough to win those games? And patently, after last night, we're not.
Nick, you said that there were some strange selections from Nuno here. Are you digging out Matt Turner with that, or are you just more surprised that people like Taiwo and Gibbs White and Elanga, who maybe could have benefited from a bit of a break start at this game?
Yeah, Turner seems to be, well, we're not in the cups anymore, but he seemed to be the cup goalkeeper. It's probably sensible to keep his eye in on if Sells, you know, drops a jar of mayonnaise on his foot or something. The eccentric ones were, yeah, no, playing Taiwo, I was kind of dreading. I almost got to the point where I didn't want us to equalise, because that would have meant an extra 30 minutes for Taiwo. But yeah, playing him for the whole game was a bit weird. Also, I mean, Origi actually did all right, but Origi on the right wing was a bit of a strange selection, and not picking Giovanni Reina was a bit of an odd one as well, because, you know, if you're going to play him, then, you know, you might as well play him in a game where you rotate a little bit more. But
does that tell you then that he's a signing that the club have made rather than that the manager wanted?
Yeah, it is a bit of a strange one, isn't it? You do know that my manager just isn't keen, just doesn't fancy a player. I mean, I know he's not been back for long, but Kiarte doesn't seem to have got a sniff either. And they are just a couple of players that Nuno clearly isn't keen on. He seems to only play Toffolo in, you know, moments of high necessity. And yeah, Reina, I don't know. I was speaking to an American colleague of mine last night, and apparently Reina does have a bit of a reputation for not training brilliantly. So if you're not playing in the team, and the one chance to get to sort of impress the manager is through training, and you're not a very good trainer, then you're a bit stuffed, aren't you? So,
but hey, he's better. All according to all those hashtag USMNT fans, you know, wherever they are in Carolina or whatever,
or he's called
better.
Chad.
He's better. He's better than the entire Forest roster. Yeah. So why isn't he playing? Spare a thought for him. Comes on for a few dead minutes. That's a weird one.
I didn't see this game, Arsha, because I was doing the Chelsea-Leeds game. Tell me it was a better performance than Aston Villa. The scoreline would suggest that maybe Forest were a bit more defensively resolute, if nothing else.
Yeah, I mean, attacking-wise, they weren't... I know that sounds weird, but attacking-wise, I don't think they were as good as they were in spots against Villa. There was some good interplay, though. There's some really good... Like, that attacking four, even with Divock Origi in it, you know, who I think, you know... I know it's only a couple of games, but he might be another one of those kind of stories of the season where you're kind of eating your words a bit, you know, because to quote Jamiroquai, who I don't think anybody's quoted in the history of podcasts ever, you know, he had canned heat in his heels. He was looking good. He really was. Like, some of these touches and things and some of the kind of play, he just looks like he's someone who's kind of realize that, you know, he sort of needs to do something here, because he's probably going to let go from Milan and you know, Forrest might not take his contract or whatever. But no, he's looking good. And for all the world, it looked like it was going to be one of those kind of memorable games for him that he seemed to have, you know, when he was at Liverpool, you know, to always sort of do something and, you know, sort of live off that a little bit. But no, it's still an exciting attacking four. There was some good interplay. I was completely living for Ryan Yates and Felipe battering Bruno Fernandes. Like, that was just so much fun. And shout out to Fulham for putting out that video. That was great. But again,
was it Felipe that got him around the neck?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we don't condone violence, but we do condone violence. But yeah, but even the goal, like, you know, we always come on in and we're sort of talking about set pieces, but that was a bit of a dim sort of free kick to give away from Elanga with the stamp and whatever. And to be fair to Danilo, he was pretty close to getting his head on it, you know, which would have kind of cleared the situation. But c'est la vie, you know. But what about our set pieces? Our set pieces seem to be quite weird these days. I don't quite understand what we're doing with them. You know, for all, you know, you're just screaming at the TV, you know, when Gibbs White puts the ball down, you're like, and then he plays some kind of weird, you know, cross field pass that completely bypasses the box. You're like, okay, so is this that Simon Rusk dude? Is he telling him to do that? Like, what is going on? Just stick the ball in the box, boys. Just if in that, put it in the box.
The Simon Rusk thing is weird, because he seems to have been... It was all quite a weird situation. He was hired in the sort of last month or so, I think, of Cooper, when it was pretty obvious that Cooper was going to go at some point soon anyway. But it was one of the things that Cooper had sort of demanded. And now he doesn't seem to be, is one of those people of the former era that Nuno doesn't seem to be particularly enamored with or use particularly. So it is a kind of very odd and extremely Forest situation where you do something that seems sensible and then you completely unpick it and make it not sensible at all. So yeah, in theory, having someone like that should improve things, but only if you use them. It's like a gym membership that you don't, if you don't actually go to the gym, then you're not going to get the benefit of it.
No, and just to go like on to Nuno as well, and we were talking about his, the strange sort of selection or whatever, but I felt like he should have made changes earlier. I don't know why. It's just, when you're watching a game and you sort of know that, oh, the rhythm of this game would change if there were fresh legs put on, and to go so late into the game, and then make some sort of, dead minute last, kind of minute changes was a bit, it was a bit of like, oh, that's a missed opportunity there, because they're a completely middling team, this United team. There's nothing really special about them, but saying that, all of our shots that we had, all the play that we, created, all the shots just ended up straight down Onana's throat, so that's on us.
Yes. Well, goal scoring been better since Nuno was in charge, but really got to tighten up at the back overall. What do you make of Nuno, James? He's got a strong jawline and a pretty imposing
Yes, yeah.
character.
He looks less like a toad, which is, that's a benefit for any manager at the top level. I think he has an imposing presence about him, which, I don't know whether that means anything at the end of the day. But to me, if I'm a player and I think, yeah, my boss knows what he's, he looks like he knows what he's doing, I'd feel more inclined to do as he says and to try and, impose his will on the pitch. I don't know a hell of a lot about him, to be honest with you. But yeah, I didn't think they were a bad team last night. I thought there was a couple of half decent chances in the first half, a couple of decent chances at the beginning. The first 5 minutes of the second half, we looked really sharp. And yeah, you've got to give him a decent chance to do something with his team, haven't you? And I don't know what he's doing with the team in terms of whether he's changing what Cooper did, but they look as good as I've seen them look in recent times, even for their sort of mere 33% possession. Thought they looked like they could score.
It's kind of standard. It's kind of what we do. It's kind of what we live on. Those are the scraps we live on, James. This is Forest of the modern era. Where it's feast or famine. Premier League, baby.
Possession's yesterday's news, anyway. Right, James, before we let you go, I want to finish with a really serious question here. So you need to give this some proper consideration. It's just sprung to my mind when we were talking about United there. If you were to pick a footballer, past or present, or somebody involved in football who would be a brilliant soap opera baddie, who would it be, and why would it be Bruno Fernandes?
Because he looks like a soap opera baddie, Bruno Fernandes. Does he look like a soap opera baddie?
Well, he's
I think
kind of
so.
good looking, but he's also got a kind
He's
of
got a Freddie
Weasley-like quality.
Mercury-esque. Yeah, I'd love to see him sing in the front line of Queen, because he's got something Freddie Mercury about him, hasn't he? He could eat an apple through a letterbox with those teeth.
Hey, I mean, with some of that rolling around, he's a great actor.
He is. Yeah, he's much better than you and I.
I think
His ability
so.
to interpret,
I
I think he'd
couldn't.
slot straight into Emmerdale. If he shaved his head, he could come and play my character, and I'll go and play for United in the midfield.
I couldn't commit to some of that rolling around, when there's just
Do you
nothing
know,
with me.
you're a method actor, Archie. You get into that role.
I'm injured. I'm really injured. Oh, my ankle. Ref, my
Ref,
ankle. No, it's no
no,
serious.
I'm
No, it's better.
okay.
Oh, we've scored. Oh, we've scored. I need to stand up and celebrate.
Well, look, actors love bookings, don't they? And so does Bruno Fernandes. So there's a natural amalgamation there, I think. James, we're so grateful for your time today. Thank you very much for joining us. We hope to have you on again in the
Thank you.
future with Forest still as a Premier League concern.
Come on, you Reds.
Right, before we move on from the Man United game, Nick, I'm going to go against what you've put in the running order here, which says let's not do the goal should have been disallowed thing. You'd like to make the case that Morgan Gibbs-White made, would you, that the goal should have been disallowed thing?
Well, no, not really. The opposite. really. I don't know, it just, I find complaining about refereeing decisions incredibly boring, particularly when there are, when you kind of, as Gibbs White did, when you use a ostensibly similar but actually quite crucially different situation, which just happened recently. So if anyone hasn't seen this, Gibbs White put a couple of screenshots on his Instagram account, which one of them was the Manchester United goal from last night, and one of them was the Liverpool goal that got disallowed in the League Cup final. Kind of ostensibly similar situations where the goal scorer wasn't offside, but there was someone else offside who then, in theory, impeded one of the kind of defending players. The difference being that in the Liverpool case, the player who was impeded would have probably got to, would have been involved in actually getting to the ball, whereas in the Forest situation, they weren't in that situation. So it's different, and it's just slightly tiresome that I find it boring. But obviously, fans are going to complain about refereeing decisions all the time, and that's kind of being slightly irrational is what is part of being a fan. So that's fine. It's just when we know that the managers get involved with it, we know in Forest's case that the club, broader club, gets involved with it. I just find it quite boring when the players start kind of kvetching on Instagram and whatever else as well. So, yeah, I don't like to go against Morgan Gibbs-White because obviously I love him more than many members of my own family, but it's just a bit dull.
But hey, Clattenburg and Howard Webb, they were sat
Exactly.
next to
Yeah,
each
they
other.
were. I heard that they didn't like each other, but they seemed very
That's
chummy.
what I heard. But maybe it was. Maybe it was just a really awkward night between them. Maybe the club just went, you know what, we're going to put you two together. And they like got to their seats and were like, oh, hi, Howard. Mark.
It was, yeah, someone's doing the seating plan like a wedding. They're like, all right, well, that he's from Nottingham, isn't he? So, and that all the ones from Leicester, so they're from the same, but we'll put them together, they'll probably get on. Two referees, they'll probably get on, they'll probably be fine.
Two retired referees, stick them together. What
And
could go wrong?
socially awkward people as well, you'd
Yeah.
imagine, it just inherently.
Yeah.
So, you know.
If you were sat anywhere near those two, then let us know. We'd love to have been eavesdropping on the conversation. If you did so, please do get in touch with us. Right, that was Man United in the FA Cup. There are a couple of ways you can support our podcast. You can give us a nice review and a 5-star rating wherever you get your pods. You can tell a friend. And if you're able, you can help out our charity partners. The first of which are Hope Nottingham, who offer a food bank service for those in need in Notts. Here's Nigel Adams from the charity to tell us more.
Hope Nottingham runs a network of 14 community hubs and food banks across the Nottingham area, everywhere from Stapleford across to Netherfield. In the last year, we've given out 25,000 food parcels for people that are struggling with all kinds of difficulty due to cost of living, due to unemployment, due to homelessness, all sorts of different issues. But we're only able to do that because we get massive, wonderful support from so many people. And Nottingham Forest, actually, in recent years, have been really helpful to us. We've done a number of food bank collections at the ground through Nottingham Forest. And the massive support that we get across the city, we're able to bring hope to hundreds of people.
To donate, visit localgiving.org/hopenottsTGG. We'll provide a link to that in the show notes too. We're going to look ahead to Liverpool with an expert in the field. Next. On Saturday, Liverpool visit the world-famous City Ground in the artist formerly known as the Barclays. To give us the inside track on the 2024 Carabao Cup winners, please welcome our guest at this time from the Liverpool Echo. It's Paul Gorse. Paul, we're really grateful to have you today. We're speaking the morning after Liverpool played Southampton in the Cup on Wednesday. And it was another night where the kids shone through, right?
Certainly was, yeah. I think Liverpool are up to 13 or 14 first team injuries at the moment, and ordinarily that should mean that your team is decimated by problems and you don't quite get the results. But these young lads have stepped in with aplomb. In fairness, Jadon Dan's sensational, really, particularly off the bench. In the Carabao Cup final, his second ever senior appearance, that followed on from his first appearance against Luton a few days earlier. And then takes his two goals superbly last night. Lewis Kumas, his first appearance in senior football last night as well, taps it off with a goal just before half-time. Bobby Clark, James McConnell, and even, you know, Conor Bradley, who's kind of looked at a little bit already as an established first teamer this season. Cueve Keller's a little bit older, but still, you know, a deputy goalkeeper. But to a man, they all stepped up superbly. And I think the senior players have got a lot to thank them for, really, particularly when you look at the medal haul at the end of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Carabao Cup was nice, good win as well, but it's all about the league, isn't it? So you're a point clear of City going into this weekend. Do you think that Forest winning this fixture last season will have any bearing on how Liverpool approach this weekend's game?
Possibly, yeah. I think they've been a different animal to what they were in that game. Was it October time, 2022? I think Liverpool had a number of injuries. I think Thiago pulled out on the morning of the game. It meant Curtis Jones at the start, and it wasn't kind of the Curtis Jones that we know now. Liverpool were desperately poor on the day. Forest deserved that win on that occasion. And I think Liverpool have come a long way, really. That was a team that was kind of, you know, starting to fall away. The likes of Jordan Henderson and Fabinho looked like yesterday's men. Liverpool look a lot more energetic this season. The signings that he made have paid off handsomely. And, yeah, I don't think it's got too much of a burden. I think there's been a lot of water under the bridge since then. But Liverpool will go there knowing that the crowd are going to be right up for it. You know, the things he played there in the FA Cup, didn't he, 2 years ago as well as the Premier League last season. So it's a ground that they're familiar with in recent years. Those two games were very, very difficult. Lost 1-1-1. So, yeah, nothing's going to be taken for granted at all. And particularly with the injury problems as well, I think Forest will certainly fancy the chances.
On the injury problems, I mean, what we're speaking now 2 days before the game. Is there any sense of what the team is going to look like by Saturday? Is it going to be the kids again? Is it you know? Is there any of the senior players that might be kind of patched up? Half the team seem to be in those moon boots at the weekend. So,
I mean, your guess is as good as mine, Nick. To be honest, I think Jürgen's always very coy when he gives the injury updates. You know, the way he kind of relays it, you think that these injuries aren't too bad and that the players are near to come back. And then 3, 4, 5 games down the line, this player is still not back. Particularly Dominic Szoboszlai was someone along those lines. I think he said a couple of weeks ago, if it was up to Szoboszlai, he'd be playing tomorrow. And lo and behold, he's missed 4 or 5 games since. So, yeah, it's a difficult one. Curtis Jones was in a cast. Wataru Endo was in a cast. Ryan Gravenberch was in a cast. They were all on crutches. And that was just hobbling out of Wembley with winners' medals. So it's going to be a case of going again for plenty of the youngsters, I'd imagine. Some suggestions Nunes might be back. I don't think Salah will make it. But, it's just a squad that's absolutely beset by injuries at the moment. And that is possibly where Forest might find some joy in, and where ultimately this Premier League title challenge might fall away.
Wow. Imagine if Forest could be the kingmakers again for a second successive season. So, Paul, Forest supporters sort of still believe that there's a rivalry between Forest and Liverpool. Is that a mutual thing, or is it just not something that crosses your modern-day Liverpool fans' radar?
Yeah, I mean, without being too disrespectful to Forest, I don't think Liverpool consider them rivals in the modern age. I think certainly some fans of a certain vintage will always remember the kind of 80s and you know how big Forest were in the rivalry back then. But you know, I'm from an era of the 90s, really. So Forest to me is kind of Pierre Van Hooijdonk and Brian Roy, and maybe to a lesser extent Stanley Collymore. So I don't think that there is any sort of modern rivalry now. But I think fans kind of put them in the brackets of Leeds United, where once they got promoted to the Premier League, they kind of think that's a proper club back in the Premier League. That, you know, that's a Premier League club back where they belong. And I'd throw Aston Villa in that a few years back as well. But in terms of kind of a rivalry nowadays, I think that is maybe something from a bygone era.
Of course, Forest have got some ex-Liverpool players in the side at the moment. Taiwo Awoniyi, Nico Williams and Divock Origi. Origi, obviously the most significant in terms of Liverpool history, I guess. You surprised to see Forest have been playing him on the wing? I guess the Liverpool deal is he's best as an 80th minute sub up front when you need a guy.
Yeah, bring him on in Champions League finals when you need to beat Barcelona 4-0. Yeah, he's a strange one, Origi. The amount of time I'd sit there watching and I'd pull my hair out thinking he hasn't done a thing today, and then he'd pop up with an incredible finish and Liverpool would win the game 1-0 or whatever it was. He's a strange player. I thought he laid on Gibbs-White with a lovely little assist at the weekend against Villa. Taiwo is having a good go, isn't he? He's kind of establishing himself as a bit of a Premier League player these days. And Nico Williams was difficult for him, really, because, you know, he was obviously coming through at a similar time as Trent Alexander-Arnold, and, you know, Trent's made 300 appearances now for Liverpool's first team. So I think Nico, maybe 30, 40 games in that Liverpool squad that was probably, well, certainly the best Liverpool team for the 21st century. I think he can be very proud of what he's done there at Liverpool, and, you know, drop down a little bit further down the Premier League to establish himself as a Premier League player as well. So, I think Liverpool have done some decent business with Forrest, haven't they? And Origi is an interesting one because, like I say, he could be anonymous for 89 minutes and then give him half a chance and he sticks it away. He's a really, really good finisher. And that's something that Liverpool will have to be wary of. But, of course, you know, Van Dijk and Konate will know all about his strengths.
Well, we let you go then. Give us a prediction. Presumably, you're not going to put this down as a home win.
Yeah, it's difficult. You know, it's difficult to come on a Nottingham Forest podcast and predict them to lose.
It's really easy.
It all depends on how many fresh legs they can get into the Liverpool team this weekend, I guess. I'll go a tight Liverpool win, 1-0.
All right, well, let's hope you're wrong. Anyway, we really appreciate your time today, Paul. Thanks for joining us. I would say enjoy the game, but that would be disingenuous. So, yes, I don't know, yeah. Maybe enjoy the visit.
You too, man. Cheers, gents. Thank you.
All right then, Arsha. Tell me about what kind of team Nuno's going to pick here. I was going to say you're going to make many changes from the Man United game, but we didn't see many changes in that game. I guess between the posts would be one where we'll see an obvious alteration.
Yeah, I think Sells come straight back in. The worry for me is the midfield. You know, I think prior to the Villa game, I'd sort of sung the praises of Dominguez and Danilo. I'd sort of gone, oh, you know, they dovetail nicely. And then at Villa, it just fell apart and they just looked like complete strangers and just looked completely overrun by their midfield. So I don't know, like, definitely, but it definitely needs a change there because you kind of, if you're going to play that four up front, that kind of three and then Taiwo, obviously you can only play two. Whereas I feel like a midfield of, you know, a Yates and a Dominguez and Danilo has its own merits, but he's obviously not going to change that because you miss a bit of that sort of bite and those kind of interceptions and, you know, some neat passing as well from Dominguez. So I guess, yeah, there, you know, that's something to look at. And then, you know, centre half as well. What do you do there? You know, because obviously Felipe and Murillo didn't quite work at Villa. So what did you do there? Like, who did you bring in there? And another funny thing as well that we didn't mention to Paul, Luis Cumas, how old does that make you feel? How old does that make you feel?
I was talking to someone about this the other day. It's the kind of the stages of you feeling old. So that I think the first stage was seeing players that I'd watched play become managers. And then it was players whose the start of their career I'd seen, then end their career. And then there were kind of a few more steps. One of the steps was referees being younger than me. That was a real blow. But now we're getting into the territory of players whose careers I saw start and finish. Now their children are playing. And it's bleak. And I would very much like both Luis Cumas and Jadon Dans not to be playing at the weekend. While that scenario were probably preferable to Forest from a sort of football point of view, it's not for my self-worth and, you know, sense of, I don't know, age, just the crushing sense that time is running past us all. And I think my well-being is more important than anything else. So, yeah.
Well, this will help you. Trey Nione, who might feature for Liverpool, was born 4 days before Fernando Torres signed for Liverpool.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we're all pretty old. That is an inescapable fact, as is, Arsha, the fact that Everton got four of their points back this week from the 10 that they were deducted. So they're on 25, one above Forest, as it stands. Are you of the opinion that this actually might be a good thing for us, because it might suggest that we might not get a full 10-point hit, or if we do, that won't stick, or would you rather that they just lost the 10 points, get another charge, lose another 10 points, and then we don't get anything but congratulations for being inventive with our accounting?
Wow. Everything you've just said. Wow. I mean, I don't know what else to say here or to offer other than that this situation is just so entirely farcical. It's mad. Like, it's a mad situation. Like,
and not just for Forest, right? And not just for Everton, but for everybody else who's trying to stay in the league or move up the league or whatever. It's crazy.
Exactly. So if you can't get this done by the end of the season, like, what the hell? Like, what are you doing? Like, and if you can't get it done by the end of the season, why isn't there any kind of contingency, you know, in terms of, I don't know, just like delay the end of the season if you can. You probably can't, you know, because of like player unions and whatever and tournaments and stuff. But like to go to the end of the season and then have to wait however many days it is to find out what, you know, where you are, it's just, even for a product, because that's what it is at the, you know, the Premier League is an entertainment product. That's what it is. And just like in my world, you know, you film the show and you know the end. You should know the end and then you put it out. You don't film the show and go, hey, you know, well, we're not quite sure. And then go sort of David Lynch about it and go, oh, you know, we'll come back to you. We've got something cooking. We'll come back to you and we'll mess up your entire life. So I've got no, I don't want to care about this situation as well, you know, which we've kind of mentioned before. I don't want to care about this situation, but to see the farcical levels it's reaching is, it would be funny if I wasn't involved.
Everyone listening to this will be slightly more dialed into it because of the, obviously got a very close investment in it. But I've had a number of conversations over the last week where people didn't realise that this could go on beyond the end of the season. And the really absurd thing for me is that it's not like the sort of hard deadline is like the 25th or something, or 24th, I can't remember exactly what it is. So it's like 4 or 5 days after the end of the season. I'd kind of understand it more if that deadline was like in the middle of June or something like that, because with that, they would have presumably thought, well, you know, this is an extremely lengthy process and there simply isn't enough time and we haven't got the resources to get it done sooner than, you know, sooner than in X month's time. But this is like 5 days after the end of the season. Surely you can just... I mean, it'd still be a fairly absurd situation if it all was finalized like 2 days before the final game. But at least it will be before the end of the season. Surely that period of those 4 or 5 days, that's not a particularly long period of time. Surely you can shorten your process or quicken things up a little bit. And, you know, I think actually officially that is what I think they're calling that a backstop date. So the implication there is that they think they will probably have it all wrapped up before then. But, I mean, does anyone really trust that? I don't think so. So Forest hearing is on I think it's on the 7th and 8th of March. We will hear what the punishment is in the kind of first, second week of April. And then there will be appeals. So this is obviously, it's obviously going to drag on. Still the amount of time that it took Everton's first appeal. Presumably they'll appeal against whatever second deduction they get as well. So it's definitely going to take, you know, longer than the end of the season, which is a fairly ludicrous situation, as you guys have said, for Forest and for everyone else that are around there. So almost someone, obviously at the moment, it's looking like it's going to be one from Forest, Everton and Luton that are going to go down if we assume that Sheffield United and Burnley are gone. So it's almost Luton that you feel the most sorry for, because they don't know what's going on. This has got nothing to do with them. And their situation is probably going to be up in the air till after the season's finished.
Yeah, that's before we get into appeals and other clubs trying to get their pound of flesh as well. A bit of levity for the situation, though. Just looking at the report on this in the Eye, Forest FFP hearing is expected to start next week with their defence being led by Nick DiMarco, KC, dubbed the Lionel Messi of sports law. I think we're going to be all right.
Absolutely love it when people do that.
Who dubbed him that? I mean,
himself. I'm going to say himself. I think, well, obviously, I wish nothing but the best for Nick DiMarco, but he's got quite a prominent Twitter account. And if you, I don't know, if you're a lawyer and a KC and you've got quite a prominent Twitter account, you probably are the kind of person that's going to dub yourself the Lionel Messi of sports law.
Yeah, I've just got his Twitter account up. The last post was 3 hours ago. Man in suit City. It looks like a link to a blog or
something. No, that's not how you figure out who he is. Go on his likes. See what he's been liking.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no. Oh, God. Oh.
It's a picture of Nuno Tavares kissing a dog. It's not. I made that up. Please don't sue me. Let's move on quickly. That is just about it for the end of today's show. But for the end bit today, I don't know why I thought of this. I just assumed that there would be a lot of tinfoil FA Cups shown on the TV coverage yesterday because TV broadcasters cannot get enough of that kind of thing. And it made me think, what's the tattiest bit of Forest tat you've ever owned slash still own slash lost many years ago? Nick, I imagine you've got quite a lot to offer here.
Yeah, well, a couple of things. And I actually now thinking about them, I'm not entirely sure if they classify as tat. But the one was I had the Stuart Pearce life-size cutout in my room for when I was a kid, but probably longer than I should have had it in there, which would have been wearing, I think, the 91-92 kit. Shorts right up to his groin, magnificent thighs on display. And my dad used to put it in the front window of our house to scare my nan when she came round, because she would always forget every single time. The other thing is something I still have, and I arrived home last season triumphant with this, and my wife looked at me like she was instantly going to divorce me. And actually, this was before we were married, so, you know. Which was in, it was the Manchester City at home game last season. I was in the ground and we were in the lower Brian Clough stand. And when Chris Wood scored that late equaliser, my mate got quite excited. He jumped up on the back of the seat in front of us to give it the big one to the City fans who were quite close by. And he broke the seat. It completely sheared off into cuts. Actually, I don't quite know how this happened, but two quite neat pieces. And we both we snaffled half a piece of seat each. So I got home, proudly showed my wife this half of a plastic seat. Said this is from the actual City ground, and I suppose the intention was to display it somewhere, but unfortunately, it has not been yet displayed.
But it's still present, resident.
Oh, yeah,
at
still.
I
can tell you exactly where it is. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to stick that in a glass, little glass.
Yeah. Well, this was the theory, but I got a not on your life.
Yeah.
I will leave you kind of look.
Yeah. I know that look.
Yeah.
And it's fair enough, I think, as well. Arshil, well, what have you got for me?
Do you know what? I don't actually have a lot of tat. Like, I like things like this. I always have mugs. Like, so I've got my mug here. Look, that's my, you know, the listener, you know, the yellow shirt from the mid-90s as a mug. But I guess my biggest piece of tat is a mouse mat of the Brian Clough stand. I've had that for a very, very long time. But it's a weird one because I don't actually use it, like as if like it's got like a finite amount of scrolls on it and I'm sort of saving them. I used to sort of play, when I used to play Football Manager, I always had that as my mouse mat. But I never managed Forest ever. Because who would? You just don't do that. Why would you want to manage Forest and do so well with them while the real thing was just finding new ways to fail? So I never ever did that, you know. But yeah, I guess that's my biggest piece of Forest, along with all the kits and the training kits and all that kind of stuff. If that qualifies, I literally every year, I don't know why, I say I'm not going to do it. Get it.
I got a mouse mat as well. And it's one of those companies that does like mock-up CFAX pages. So I've got the mouse mat of the 1989 or 1990 League Cup final.
89
League Cup final with the scorers and everything. Anyway.
With a number nine brace.
I really like that.
Number nine.
Yeah, the number nine.
Mine, which is still kicking about in my mum's loft somewhere, I think, was the paper hat that we were all issued with for Ron Atkinson's first game in charge, the ill-fated sitting in the wrong dugout one. It was like a paper sort of twirly one, so it had lots of gaps in it, very, very cheap. And it simply said, "Come on, big Ron," on it. And if you remember rightly, that Gary Glitter song was played as he came out, so we could all chant, "Come on, big Ron." Right? It should have been, "You're in the wrong one, big Ron." I mean, on every conceivable level, that is just not something that we want to be reflecting on or thinking about very much, is it? But I don't know, maybe I could stick it on eBay and get a few quid for it. If you'd like to make me an offer, please feel free to do so. Tell us your biggest piece of forest tat as well. And tat is an affectionate term for something that you just can't bear to throw away, whether it be a tinfoil FA Cup. Shout out to that fan as well at the game last night who had the sign saying, "Lino, can I have your shirt, please?" Because that is a beautiful way to subvert what has become the most annoying trope in modern football for me. No, little child, you cannot have that shirt. Your dad's only going to put it on eBay anyway. And these things cost a lot of money, even to football clubs. Don't bother with it. Let's stop this now before I go too far. Follow us on X at the Garibaldi G, the Garibaldi Gazette on Instagram, and you can watch the pod on YouTube where we are also the Garibaldi Gazette. Well, it was lovely to have two guests with us this week. Thanks again to James and to Paul for their company. Arsha, Nick, stellar work as ever. Should we do it all again next week?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Excellent. Thank you to listener. Tell somebody else that we're here. If you like, give us a nice review on your podcast platform of choice. It all helps us promote the pod and find more Forest fans. Be back with you again next week. Bye for now.